Welcome to the Fightful Select Weekender Podcast. Today is Sunday, June 30th, 2024. I'm Steven Jensen. Hope you had a great week and a great weekend, and happy Forbidden Door Day. Yes, later today will be AEW New Japan's Forbidden Door, big show coming up. I'm going to give you some predictions right here. Also have some predictions and previews over on the Spotlight if you want to check that out over on the main Fightful YouTube channel. Myself and Jeremy Lambert broke most of the show down on Thursday morning, but I'll give some extended thoughts and predictions here on the show today, along with everything else we're going to talk about. Big combat sports weekend, of course, as well. If you're a fan of the UFC, there was UFC 303 last night. There's a lot of independent professional wrestling shows and a lot to cover today on the Weekender. So without any further ado, let's go through topics and jump into it. On this edition of the Weekender, we have results for GCW, No Sleep, and Crime Wave. So two big GCW events to go through today. Also had Blitzkrieg Pros, the 6th annual Luau, Freelance vs. The World 10, got predictions, as I mentioned, for Forbidden Door, got some TNA Impact spoilers, so I'll give you a spoiler alert, and I'll put the timestamps underneath the audio here on FightfulSelect.com. Just look at this, the description underneath the audio and skip around if you don't want the spoilers for Impact. Also going to give some results for NXT Level Up, and I'll end today's show with some WWE Money in the Bank predictions, because the next time you'll hear me on the Weekender will be on Sunday next week. So either Sunday or Monday, depending on what independent shows might be running Sunday night. But either way, there won't be another episode of the Weekender before Money in the Bank. So I'll give you my predictions right here on today's show with everything available so far on the card up to this moment. And I'll also give you extended predictions and a preview of the show of Forbidden Door on the Spotlight this Thursday. That'll be 8:30 a.m. Eastern Time. This Thursday actually falls on the 4th of July. Jeremy will not be there, but I will. I'll have SP3 joining me, and we will be sponsored by WrestleRumble.com, as always, for these big WWE shows. Whenever they have those WrestleRumble pick'em contests, they always jump on there with us for the Spotlight sponsorships, which we very much appreciate. Shout out to Matt and that whole team over there at WrestleRumble.com. Great people, great contests. I'll give them a plug here on the Weekender as well, but I'll be giving away entries on the Spotlight, myself and SP3 once again, and I'll give away entries throughout the week on my social media. So follow me on X at @FightTalk_. I'll give away entries for Money in the Bank throughout the week, and also, of course, we'll give away some on the Spotlight. So very much looking forward to this week. Got a lot to talk about right here on the Weekender. Once again, a lot of results. We got GCW, Blitzkrieg, Freelance, and NXT Level Up. Got some predictions for Forbidden Door and Money in the Bank, and some spoilers for TNA Impact. And also, there was some big news out of the Blitzkrieg show, which I'm going to elaborate on as well. A big return to the independent scene. So, a lot to talk about. We're going to start off today with Game Changer Wrestling results. We got GCW No Sleep. This show took place on Friday night. So this was on June 28th. It's from Houston, Texas, out of the Houston Premier Arena. If y'all want to check out the interview myself and Jeremy did for the Spotlight with Sam Stackhouse, we interviewed him last week, or actually 2 weeks ago. We had Corey Michaels on this week, but 2 weeks ago we had Sam Stackhouse on. We actually talked quite a bit about the Houston Premier Arena, because companies like New Texas and Loco, it's like a real destination venue for Houston independent wrestling. Not the most comfortable building to wrestle in because of the temperature fluctuations. It gets super, super hot in there and super, super cold. I imagine it was insanely hot and humid in that building. I know for the fans it's tough, and for the wrestlers, but it just makes for an overall experience that people definitely associate with the Houston Premier Arena. But I've seen a lot of great wrestling out of that venue on platforms like Triller TV Plus and IWTV, so once again, if you want to know more about kind of this arena in general and kind of the Houston, Texas independent scene, definitely check out the interview me and Jeremy did with Sam Stackhouse recently. And we'll be talking about Sam as well throughout these results. So we're going to start off with GCW No Sleep. The first match we have is Dulce Tormenta over Broski Jimmy. The finish here was Tormenta doing... It's like, if y'all are familiar with like the Andrade running knees in the corner, which I always kind of jokingly also call the running nuts to the face. Tormenta does a version of this, but does it to the back of Broski Jimmy's head, and then does it to the front of Broski Jimmy, and then hits him with a running destroyer for the 1-2-3. So Dulce Tormenta over Broski Jimmy in the opener via running Canadian destroyer. After that, we had Joey Janela over Chris Carter. A lot of the talent, such as Chris Carter, Sam Stackhouse, Fuego del Sol, a lot of the people we're going to mention throughout the results, Dante Leon, a lot of the people we're going to mention throughout the results of these GCW events are big out of the Houston scene as well. Chris Carter definitely being one of those dudes. This match here, we had Janela over Carter. The finish here was Janela catching like a springboard or like some sort of like stunner attempt by Carter and hitting him with a package pile driver for the 3 count. After that, we had Manders over Brick Savage. The finish of this one was after Manders hit a lariat and a kick out at 1, they fought a little bit longer. Eventually, Brick Savage hit a nice lifting powerbomb with a stack pin onto Manders. Manders kicks out at 2, follows up immediately with a running lariat, 1-2-3. After that, we had Jordan Oliver over Fuego del Sol. The finish of this one was Jordan reversing a DDT attempt with a folding stack pin for the 3 count. After the match, Charles Mason comes out and attacks Fuego with a steel chair. Jordan comes back out and saves Fuego from the attack from Mason. After that, we had Sam Stackhouse over Bobby Flacco, Calibus. I always call him Epi, but Epidemus Jr., Mago, and Shota. The finish of this one was Stackhouse hitting Epi with a J-driller for the 3 count. Up next, we had a GCW World title match that really wound up not really being that, unfortunately. We had Dante Leon technically winning a match over GCW champion Mance Warner by disqualification, but this match only lasted like a minute. Essentially, what happens is the two of them are going back and forth after Mance came out and cut a promo on Houston, talked about how trash the arena is and all that stuff. Basically, the stuff that I just kind of mentioned that makes it kind of like endearing. It's annoying, you know, people don't want to like, you know, have to deal with that stuff as wrestling fans, like the elements like that, you know, but they still love it because they love that venue. They love their wrestlers and they're there to support. So of course, Mance coming out. We're going to talk about Manders in a second, but Mance coming out and trashing the fans in the building and everything beforehand. This all leads to Dante and him squaring off. Their match starts and Broski Jimmy basically comes out, causes the DQ right away. While this beatdown is happening from Deathmatch Royalty, Manders comes back out and he saves Dante Leon, setting up a tag team match on the next night's show. I feel bad for Dante, though, because like he should have gotten a legit GCW World title match, in my opinion. He's a guy who doesn't wrestle super consistently for GCW. He's done plenty of GCW events, especially in like the Texas area, but he's one of those guys that's super talented, super over, former Loco champion out of that building. Like, if you were going to have him be advertised for a GCW World title match, I feel like he should have had an actual GCW World title match against Mance. That's just my personal opinion. I'll elaborate more on that because, like, it does lead to, you know, the tag team match the next night, but I don't know. I just feel like I would have liked to see an actual one-on-one match between Dante and Mance. I don't know why they went the route that they did that night. After that, we had a tag team match where Los Desperados, the team of Arez and Gringo Loco, defeat Los Macizos, the team of Miedo Extremo and Ciclope. The finish of this one was Gringo Loco hitting a top rope Spanish fly through a door bridge onto Miedo Extremo, if I remember correctly. And then Arez comes off the top rope with a top rope double stomp for the 3 count. After that, we had Microman over Dark Sheik. Throughout this match, Microman did hit the 5 moves of doom by John Cena to a big pop from the audience. Microman being one of the most over wrestlers on a consistent basis right now in GCW. We had, his only loss was just during the gauntlet, the gauntlet of survival. I think that's the only loss of any kind Microman is taken in GCW in this run that he's on, I think. That said, Microman gets the win over Dark Sheik in this one. He moves out of the way when Sheik comes off the top rope with a top rope leg drop. Sheik misses. Microman does his running double stomp in the corner, followed up by a Vader bomb from the second rope for the 3 count. After that, we had the main event of the night. We had a Houston street fight. This was Zilla Fatu defeating John Wayne Murdoch. This was a great match. The finish unfortunately didn't go as planned, but everything leading up to that was really badass. And Zilla Fatu too is super over, and he really played up to the Houston crowd as well with like his entrance and all that stuff. Like he really knows what he's doing, and he's a guy that I've said it 1,000 times. It's just a matter of time before he's in the WWE system and he's a part of this whole bloodline thing. And the only thing that I think could be preventing that is just because he's newer to the scene, doesn't have as much experience as most of the guys that are going to be involved in that story. Maybe they're going to wait till later to eventually bring him in and introduce him. But I also feel like Solo Sikoa had like more limited experience than Zilla did when he came in, and he was a part of the system a little bit. Like, we covered him on NXT Level Up for like a few weeks, and then he had like a really short run on the main NXT show, and all of a sudden, I mean, I know they slow built him as like kind of a background character, as like an enforcer of the bloodline, and now he stepped forward as like the leader of the new bloodline, and it's taken time to do that. But my point is, if you took Solo Sikoa and his like ability and skill set level when he came into WWE versus what Zilla's is right now, I think Zilla's way better than Solo was when he got signed, if that makes sense. Which is my whole point of being like, you might as well assign Zilla now. You know what I mean? He's going to be there eventually for sure. That said, the finish this one was pretty sweet until something just didn't go exactly as planned. So basically the setup is John Wayne Murdoch is laid out on a door bridge on the outside of the ring. Zilla runs off the ring apron and hits him with a nice splash through the door bridge, throws him back into the ring, and then he tries lighting his wrist tape and thumb on fire, because for those of you who don't know, I was called Zilla Fatu Numaga. He is the son of Umaga. He does the Samoan Spike, and he does it better than everyone else in their family. I'm just going to throw it out there. I'm not going to like roast Solo Sikoa's spike. He hits it well, but Zilla hits it with much more athleticism. He does like usually like a running diving version of it. Like, he switches it up. And this one, he tried to light his thumb on fire before hitting it, and the thing just wouldn't light. And that was a bit of a bummer, because that was clearly going to be like the big visual effect for the finish of the match. But nonetheless, Zilla gets the win with his running Samoan Spike for the 3 count, and gets a huge deathmatch win over John Wayne Murdoch. I mean, this was probably the most violent setting I've seen Zilla in, especially in like a one-on-one match in GCW. And he really rose to the occasion. I thought he did great. And John Wayne Murdoch is one of, if not the best deathmatch wrestlers in the entire world right now, in my opinion. And I think in the opinion of most people who follow deathmatch wrestling would agree that JWM is going to be way up everybody's list. So Zilla was in there with like the right guy, and not to say that this wouldn't have been great with other people, but it was like a perfect match. Like, you had JWM, who, like I said, in this genre of wrestling, maybe the best in the world at what he's doing right now. And Zilla just had to just do his thing, and John Wayne Murdoch was able to, I mean, they meshed really well, and it made Zilla look awesome, which was the point. So that said, that was a GCW No Sleep. And then that's, and also, of course, that's available on Triller TV Plus, just like GCW Crime Wave 2024 is available on Triller TV Plus. And this one was from last night at the time of this recording. This is on June 29th. This was out of Dallas, Texas, so not too far from Houston. Both Texas shows this weekend for Game Changer Wrestling. And these are the results of GCW Crime Wave. Show started off with Blake Christian over Sam Stackhouse. This, of course, was non-title because Blake Christian technically is not the GCW World Champion anymore, although he is still carrying his championship belt that he never lost. And to be fair, like, logically speaking, they really shouldn't have stripped Blake Christian, considering he only missed like one GCW weekend. Now, granted, it was a big GCW weekend. It was, Tournament of Survival, Cage of Survival weekend. And Blake Christian wasn't able to defend his championship against Joey Janela in a match that they had built up for a very long time. But as I've said 1,000 times before this, Brett Lauderdale and GCW, who I love to death, they should have pulled the trigger on Janela winning the championship at Spring Break and then Mance beating him at Spring Break. Everything that they did pretty much at Tournament of Survival, Cage of Survival weekend, that should have just happened at Spring Break, and then they wouldn't have been in the position that they're in now. That said, it's just kind of weird because like Blake didn't take like an extended leave. He was back just like a few weeks after being stripped of the championship. So Anyway, it's confusing because Blake Christian is a, you know, the champion that never lost, and he's a heel. Mance Warner is the current true champion, the lineal champion, or however you would technically call it. He is the actual champion, and he's a heel. And then Joey Janela's babyface, who is not a champion, but he's in the mix still because he keeps getting screwed over. So I'm interested to see how this all winds up eventually playing out, because they are having a three-way match for that championship soon. And I think Mance Warner should leave that thing as the undisputed GCW World Champion. But I digress. As far as this match goes, Blake Christian gets to win over Stamps, over Sam Stackhouse. Gets to win after hitting a springboard 450 splash and then locks in a deep Fujiwara armbar, forcing Stackhouse to tap out. After the match, Blake Christian hits a curb stomp onto the title belt onto Sam Stackhouse. After that, we had Alley Catch over Dulce Tormenta. The finish here was Alley Catch, like, doing one of those, like, ass bumps to the face of Tormenta, like, kind of Asuka style, like a hip thrust, but more of like a booty bump, given that's one of Alley Catch's main weapons. She hits that and then follows up with a pussy pile driver for the 1-2-3. Up next, we had Jordan Oliver over John Wayne Murdoch. The finish of this one was Oliver hitting a shell shocked through a door onto JWM for the 1-2-3. Big win here for Jordan. Double L's for John Wayne Murdoch this weekend, but he's a guy, as I mentioned before, in his element and stuff. Like, he can lose. He's pretty much a made man as far as I'm concerned. Jordan needs to keep picking up big wins like this. I've talked about it for years at this point, how Jordan Oliver should be a GCW World Champion. He did great with the JCW Championship. He was the champion for like a whole year. He's had a recent heel turn on some of the indie promotions he pops up in, but continues to be a babyface here in GCW. And he needs to keep getting wins, I think, because I think he is going to be a main challenger for Mance Warner and possibly Blake Christian if Blake somehow gets the title back. But regardless, I think Jordan should be in that mix for the World Championship at this point. And he should have been already, but like, now is definitely the time. So it makes sense for him to get a win over JWM in this fashion. Good stuff. Jordan goes 2-0 for the weekend, a win over Fuego and a win over John Wayne Murdoch. After that, we had Sidney Akeem, who y'all might remember as Scripps or Reggie from the WWE, takes on Ninja Mac. So Akeem over Ninja Mac in this one, in a real stylistic kind of dream match. You know, if you're familiar with both these guys, you immediately think similar to Akeem versus Jack Harwell, which we've already gotten. Ninja Mac versus Akeem just completely books itself. There's a lot of really cool stuff in this match. Some of it didn't come across exactly how they had planned, but the majority of it was pretty damn cool. And I appreciate the innovation in them going for it, if that makes sense. Like, sometimes even if something isn't exactly as planned, but I know that there was a lot of effort and thought put in it, I'll still kind of turn the other cheek and be like, yeah, that might have not have been perfect, but I appreciate the effort. You know what I mean? I thought this match overall was really fun. Like, I definitely recommend checking that match and this whole card out, but that said, Akeem gets the win over Ninja Mac after hitting a back handspring cutter for the three count. After that, we had the GCW tag team titles on the line. Balances Forever, Dominic Greene and Kevin Koo defend and retain their titles over Los Desperados, the team of Erez and Gringo Loco. In my opinion, said it before and I'll say it again, Balances Forever, the best tag team in the entire world right now. And massive shout out, as we say on the spotlight, to Big Dick MLJ, who does the intros and a lot of the commentary and all the ring announcing for GCW. He is perfect at these introductions now. For the last month or so, he's been getting it to where he can now perfectly time out his intro of VIF right when Zombie by Cranberries hits the chorus, so the fans can sing it right on cue for the entrance. It's perfectly done. It adds even more to the presentation of what I already believe to be the best tag team in the world. So awesome stuff all the way around. And this was a great match between four great competitors. Once again, VIF over Los Desperados in this one. The finish here was Greeny hitting Erez with a sleeper suplex to kind of knock him out of the match. And then VIF does a double team chasing the dragon onto Gringo Loco and pins him to retain their titles. After that, this was a three-way trios match. This was Mother, Father, Daddy, which was Dark Sheik, Effie, and Cole Radrick. So, you know, Dark Sheik being the mother portion, Effie being the father portion, Cole Roderick being the daddy portion. We had them over the team of the Bob Squad, which was Bobby Flacco, Chris Carter, and Shota, as well as Lucha Libre guys, the team of Epi, Calibus, and Mago. The finish of this one was Cole Roderick hitting Epi with a stunner, followed up by Effy hitting Epi with a sack rider, and then Dark Sheik coming off the top rope and hitting Epi with a top rope leg drop for the 1-2-3 for Mother, Father, Daddy to get the W. After that, we had Galano Del Mal over Fuego del Sol. The finish of this one was Galano catching a DDT attempt by Fuego and hitting, I wrote down a butterfly final reckoning, if you're familiar with Dustin Rhodes' finisher, which I think he called the curtain call in WWE, but it's like the twisting vertical suplex he does. It was like that, but from like a double underhook, like butterfly J-driller type position. So, nice stuff there. After that, we had a mask versus mask match. High stakes here. This was Microman taking on Danhausen. Danhausen wore a mask that looked similar to his face paint on top of his face paint. The finish of this one was Microman putting on Danhausen's cape and then cursing him. And then Danhausen like runs to attack Microman and flies into a door that's propped up in the corner and goes through it. Microman follows up by hitting an attitude adjustment, a running double stomp on the corner, and then a Vader bomb from the second rope to get the 1-2-3 pinfall victory over Danhausen. After the match, Microman pulls Danhausen's mask off to unmask him. Of course, Danhausen has his face paint on underneath, but then he still covers his face to run away like they would, you know, cowering away trying to hide their identity in a mask versus mask match. So this was good stuff all the way around. It was a short match. It was only like 6 minutes long, but it was a great 6 minutes. Very entertaining, and both guys meshed well and did pretty much exactly what you'd expect in a match like this, mask versus mask. So once again, Microman over Danhausen. After that, we had a tag team match where Joey Janela and Megan Bain defeated Los Macisos, the team of Mato Extremo and Ciclope. The finish of this one was Janela hitting a swanton bomb off the top rope through a door bridge, I believe onto Miedo. I know one from the other, but I don't always write down who takes each move, so that I can't remember. But I know that Joey Janela hit a swanton bomb through a door bridge onto one of the members of Los Macisos, because right after that, everything just goes crazy, because like Blake Christian comes out of nowhere, hits a top rope elbow drop, Megan Bain comes out of nowhere, spears Blake Christian, Broski Jimmy comes out, everyone's fighting in the ring. Megan Bain eventually hits a double choke slam onto both members of Los Macisos and then pins both of them, which is a huge, huge move. I mean, I know Megan Bain has been, I believe, undefeated in GCW in this run that she's on, and she's looked totally unstoppable, and she should. She's very talented. I think she's got a super, super bright future. But that's a huge vote of confidence, double pinning the former four-time GCW World Champions, the most decorated GCW World Champions in history. That's huge. So Megan Bain gets a double pin after a double choke slam on both members of Los Macisos. After the match, Mance Warner comes out with a chair and attacks everybody, which basically sets up the main event of the show, because the main event is Broski Jimmy and Mance Warner in a tag team match, so everyone's kind of already out there in the ring as Mance Warner is attacking the babyfaces. Manders and Dante Leon come out to help, and that just flows right into the main event. So the main event itself, we had Manders and Dante Leon defeat Broski Jimmy and Mance Warner. Of course, this match was set up the previous night, as I mentioned, when Dante Leon was supposed to get a fair one-on-one shot against Mance Warner, and then everything that happened in the match right before this. The finish here was basically after like help from Joey Janela and Megan Bain, like they come out to even the odds against Deathmatch Royalty out there. Manders hits a lariat onto Broski Jimmy, and then Dante Leon, I think he calls it the End Seeker, but he hits his like, well, you know what? It's actually crazy because people are familiar with this move now because Sol Ruka does it, the Soul Snatcher. So if you're familiar with that move, Dante Leon's been doing that move for years, but he hits that 1-2-3. Dante Leon and Manders get the win in the main event. And I mean, it was cool to see, like, it was a big vindicating moment for Dante Leon in that venue. But as I mentioned before, he should have just had a straight up one-on-one match for the title. But that said, this was really fun. Two great GCW events, both available over on Triller TV Plus. Moving on, got more results. This is Blitzkrieg Pro, and this is available over on independentwrestling.tv. This is the sixth annual luau. You can use code FIGHTTALK on independentwrestling.tv, and it helps, just helps them know that I'm sending you their way. I appreciate when you use that code. That's FIGHTTALK. All is one word, no spaces, independentwrestling.tv or IWTV.live. But you can check out this show. Once again, this is Blitzkrieg Pro's, the sixth annual luau, and these are the results from, this is June 29th. This was last night, and this was the, is it Enfield? Is that how you pronounce it? Enfield, Connecticut, out of the old Country Banquet Hall. We had a dark match, which I don't have the finish for, but Will Strauss defeated Nico Rodriguez. When the actual show started, the first match we had was Marcus Mathers over VSK. The finish here was, I wrote down a little Sebastian's Curse flatliner, because I don't know how else to describe it. If you're familiar with Cole Radrick, which you should be, because I talk about him every week on this show and a lot of weeks on the Spotlight, and he's been on the Spotlight more than pretty much anyone as a guest outside of, I think, John Mosley, a.k.a. Mose, a.k.a. Jumpin' Johnny Mosley. If you know, you know. K-O-B-K. But that said, Mathers hits basically a setup like how Cole does Little Sebastian's Curse, but instead of falling down into like a sit-out powerbomb, he flips it over into a flatliner for the three count. After that, we had the mother of all scrambles, which is hard to explain, but essentially, like, as people kind of get eliminated, groups of people keep entering, almost like a casino battle royal type gimmick match. This one was Sammy Diaz defeating 50 Cal, Angelo Carter, Ashley Vox, Delightful Dan, the goddamn Candy Man, Haley Dillon, Jay George, Kirby Wackerman, Leary, Perry Von Vicious, and Tristan Kyle. The finish of this one was Sammy Diaz hitting a top rope frog splash onto Perry Von Vicious for the 1-2-3. With this win, Sammy Diaz gets a future title shot at the Blitzkrieg Bedlam Championship, which is their version of their heavyweight title. After that, we had Bobby Orlando over Paul London in one-on-one action. The finish of this one was Paul London going for a top rope Frankensteiner and Orlando holding the top rope, sitting on the top turnbuckle. So London crashes and burns going for a Frankensteiner, and Orlando follows up with a sick trick, which is his second rope diving cutter for the 1-2-3. After the match, Paul London like puts over Bobby Orlando and puts over Blitzkrieg Pro, just like as a company in the indie scene altogether. So this was really cool. I still love seeing Paul London out there. I don't understand why he, you know, it's been years that he's been doing this, but like, I don't know why he does the whole dressing up like Fat Elvis thing and the singing before the matches and all that stuff, but it is what it is. The guy is out there. He's always been out there, and, you know, he's Paul London. He's unapologetically Paul London. For those who remember, I'm still a member of the Swarm. If you want to look up those old interviews from back in the day, him and Brian Danielson, the Swarm. But anyways, Bobby Orlando gets a big win over legitimate independent pro wrestling legend Paul London, and a guy who really, I think, should have accomplished much bigger things in the WWE system while he was there. But I also think he was kind of his own worst enemy when it came to certain stuff too. But he was always super athletic. I'll never forget seeing the first time that I saw him do a shooting star press. Like, I'd seen other people do that move, like Jushin Thunder Liger and Billy Kidman and stuff, but I'd never seen somebody tuck in and like flip the way that Paul London could just get like that kind of air he could on his. And just looks so much prettier than all the other SSPs that I've ever seen in my life up to that point. So I'm always going to have a soft spot for Paul London as a fan, but that said, Bobby Orlando with a big win, the GOAT getting the win over Paul London once again with the sick trick. After that, we had a fans bring the pool toys match, which is essentially fans bring the weapons match. This is Akira defeating Logan Black. The finish of this one was Akira hitting a powerbomb onto a board that was covered in mouse traps, following up with a running elbow to the face for the three count. After that, we had an eight-person tag match, I always like to say. Eddie Prevett and Los Toxicos defeat Delta House and the Even Stevens. The finish of this one was the sweeper hitting a Yoshi Tonic onto Steven Azure for the 1-2-3. Up next, we had Ryan Mooney over Griffin McCoy. The finish of this one was a top rope Cody Cutter followed up by a running knee strike by Mooney to McCoy for the 1-2-3. After that, we had the Blitzkrieg Tag Team titles on the line. The Legion of Rot, the team of Frightmare and Hollow Wicked, defeat Miracle Generation, Kylan King and Dustin Waller, to become the new Blitzkrieg Tag Team champions. The finish here was Hollow Wicked hitting a cross-legged DDT and getting the win for his team and becoming the new champs. And the main event of the show, we had the Blitzkrieg Bedlam title on the line. CPA defeats TJ Crawford to become the new champion. The finish here is both guys up on the top rope. Crawford grabs CPA by the tie and rips at it, thinking he's going to be choking him. But of course, CPA's got the clip tie on, so it comes right off. During the confusion, Crawford gets put on the shoulders of CPA. CPA hits him with a number cruncher off the second rope, which is his version of an attitude adjustment, and pins him. 1-2-3, CPA becomes the new Blitzkrieg Bedlam champion. After the match, a bunch of the baby faces come out from the locker room and all celebrate. They put CPA up on his shoulders, and as you just feel like the celebration is about to end and the show is about to close out of nowhere, a very large man wearing all black with his face covered up enters the ring and reveals himself to be Donovan Dijak. Yes, Dijak from the WWE, who is now out of his contract. He has hit the indie scene. I'll give you some additional thoughts on Dijak here in a second, based on like what he was saying himself after this appearance. But it's great to see Dijak. I mean, he attacks everybody. He lays everybody out, and he has returned to Blitzkrieg, which is a place that he had performed pretty regular on before he got signed to the WWE. I've talked about it 1,000 times on this show. I made a 10-hour round trip drive one day years ago, mainly to see Donovan Dijak versus Mara Fuji one-on-one. Now, of course, Cody Rhodes was also appearing on that show, so I don't want to lie. It wasn't just all because of Dijak, but because of that match, it was like, Cody's appearing and we're getting Dijak versus Mara Fuji. I'll drive 10 hours. You know what I mean? So, I've always been a Dijak guy, and I'm very looking forward to seeing what he does outside the WWE. I think he should have accomplished way more in the WWE system, for especially as long as he was there, given his athleticism and his size and everything. Felt like he was a can't-miss prospect when the WWE signed him, and I just, for whatever reasons, it just never really happened for him. But that said, big things are probably on the horizon for Dijak. I'm going to actually go ahead and tell y'all what he was saying. This is an article from Corey Brennan on Fightful.com, so shout out to Corey. Made this real easy for me to just go through this and read this out to y'all. He did the transcription work as well. I always want to give credit where that's due there. So via Fightful.com, via Corey Brennan, and put all this together based on Dijak's return. He notes, of course, that Dijak returned to Blitzkrieg, which I just talked about. He went on social media, and this is a quote from Dijak. He says, "What a time. What a time to be alive. Feast your eyes, because Donovan Dijak is back. Last night at Blitzkrieg Pro in Enfield, Connecticut. Hang on a second. Just going to go through this door real quick. It's a beautiful, sunshiny New England day. The sun is out. The kids are playing. Donovan Dijak is playing wherever he damn well pleases. I'm going to show up. Wherever I want, whenever I want, you can all feast your eyes on that, because that is exactly what the Dijak hijack is all about. You know what? Today is such a beautiful day. It's early in the morning right now. Why don't we go for a nice little drive, huh? Maybe a 4-hour drive, 4.5-hour drive. I think that's exactly what today calls for." And he put that out earlier today. And why is that interesting and notable? Because about 4.5 hours from where he was would be enough time to get him to Long Island for AEW and New Japan's Forbidden Door tonight. So I feel like there is a chance we could see Dijak showing up, maybe not necessarily becoming All Elite tonight. I don't know what his intentions are, if he's trying to sign, if he wants to be free agent, what he's trying to do right now, but I would not be surprised if we feast our eyes later tonight at Forbidden Door. Moving on, got more results. We got Freelance versus the World 10. The show's available on independentwrestling.tv. Use code FIGHTTALK. This was from Chicago, Illinois, and this was from the Logan Square Auditorium. This was two nights ago, so this was on June the 28th. And this, of course, being the 10-year anniversary show for Freelance Wrestling, these are the results. Show started off with a six-person scramble match where Devin Monroe defeated Alfonso Gonzalez, GPA Matt Nix, Darius Luttrell, and Saban Gage. The finish of this one was Devin hitting, it was like a springboard X-Factor type move, but it was like dome to dome instead of like down to the mat, if that makes sense. Devin gets the big win here in the opener scramble. That was, okay, again, Monroe hitting that on Gonzalez for the three count. After that, we had Reagan Lytle over Sandra Moon. The finish of this one was a riptide by Lytle to Moon for the 1-2-3. Up next, we had Danhausen over Isaias Velasquez. Danhausen gets the win after he curses Velasquez, who's up on the top rope. He falls down, crotches himself on the top, and Danhausen falls up with a go-to-sleephausen for the 1-2-3. After that, we had a no-DQ match where Trevor Outlaw, with Frank the Clown on the outside, defeats Chico Suave. The finish here was Outlaw hitting a belly-to-belly suplex through a door in the corner, followed up with a pedigree for the three count. One of the bigger wins of Trevor Outlaw's career. He's been on a real roll as of late. And, you know, he's a guy who has made it a long way. I mean, a long way from shooting himself in the nuts in the entrance ramp of the clusterfuck years ago at Joey Janela's Spring Break to the where he's at now. Very admirable. He's got a good taste in music as well. After that, we had a tag team match. This is a big tag team match. We had Bang and Matthews, team of August Matthews and Davey Bang. They defeat the Motor City Machine Guns, the team of Alex Shelley and Chris Sabin. The finish here was Davey Bang throwing Chris Sabin into Alex Shelley, who was up on the top rope. It knocks Alex Shelley off the ropes. And at like this point in the match, August Matthews is like a non-factor. He's been kind of taken out, so it's basically 2-on-1. But because Bang throws Sabin into Shelley, he evens the odds because Shelley falls off the top. And he follows up by Bang does like a bridging O'Connor roll pin onto Shelley. 1-2-3. Huge win, with Bang and Matthews getting a clean victory over MCMG. After the match, all four guys shake hands. Up next, we had the Freelance Legacy title on the line. Cota Hernandez defeats Darren Corbin to become the new champion. The finish here was two spinning back fists, followed up by an implant DDT for the pinfall victory. Up next, we had the Freelance tag team titles on the line. The Syndicate, the team of Calvin Tankman and Shane Mercer, defeat Bussy, the team of Ally Catch and Effie, become the new Freelance Tag Team Champions. The finish here was James Russo is on the outside, hits Ally Catch with a belt while the referee's distracted to take her out of the match. Mercer grabs Effie by the throat and then throws him up in the air, basically a pop-up onto Calvin Tankman's shoulder, who hits a Tankman driver, his version of the Rikishi driver, onto Effie, pins him. 1-2-3. Syndicate are the new champions. And then the main event of the show, we had the Freelance World title on the line. Storm Grayson defends and retains over Kylie Rae. The finish here saw Kylie Rae, Smiley Kylie, have to kind of go to the dark side a little bit, you know, reach down and decide, like, is it worth it or not? And she decides it is. She takes a steel chair, hits Storm Grayson in the head with it. The ref counts 1, 2, and out of nowhere, Isaias Velasquez comes out and breaks up the count, so that the referee can't make the three count. Saban Gage hits a hidden blade while this is happening onto Kylie Rae, and then pulls Storm Grayson on top of Kylie so that Grayson can make the pin. After the match, Isaias Velasquez, Saban Gage, and Storm Grayson all celebrate together with Storm Grayson's Freelance Championship. So that, once again, was Freelance vs. the World 10, available over on independentwrestling.tv. Moving on, got some predictions. We're going to do some predictions here for AEW New Japan Wrestling's Forbidden Door. This show's taking place later tonight, and I'm very much looking forward to it. You know, I talked on the spotlight quite a bit about how, you know, do you really need this pay-per-view anymore? Does it overshadow, you know, All In? Should Will Ospreay be potentially taking a loss this close to All In? There's a lot of questions about this show. A lot of the New Japan talent that would have been big Forbidden Door matches, like a lot of the New Japan talent just now works for AEW, and we see them all the time. So that all said, though, we got 12 matches, actually 14 matches on the card, but I think four of them are going to be on the pre-show. So probably a 10-match main card, which I know Jeremy Lambert on Twitter got some discourse going online about, you know, how many matches are the right amount of matches for pay-per-views and stuff like that. To each his own on all that stuff. I will say, though, I've really been enjoying the WWE PLEs, and they've been less matches as of late. But for the hardcore wrestling audience, I think we're going to have a good time tonight watching Forbidden Door. So I don't want to sound too down on it on the spotlight, but I probably did. But a lot of that really has more so to do with, like, the position of everybody heading into All In, if that makes sense, of, like, the actual full-time AEW roster. That said, here are my predictions for Forbidden Door. We got a pre-show match, which is going to be LIJ taking on Lucha Brothers and Mystico. Oh, speaking of Mystico, Chris Jericho popped up on CMLL the other night, completely randomly attacked Mystico. We also saw Charlie Dempsey appear in TNA. I know that's kind of a spoiler alert, but like, it really isn't, because it's so out there all over social media. But there have been more and more quote unquote Forbidden Door things happening across all these companies lately, which is a lot of fun to see. As far as the trios match here, I'm gonna take Lucha Brothers, the team of Penta and Rey, Phoenix and Mystico. I'm gonna take them over LIJ in that one. We got a tag team match where Chris Statlander and Momo Watanabe are taking on Willow Nightingale and Tam Nakano. I'm going to take Willow's team in that one. For that, we got Mariah May versus Saraya. This is in the Owen Hart Cup tournament first round. I'm going to take Mariah May in this one. I'm going to take Mariah May to win the whole tournament, so I'm going to, by default, be choosing her in all of her matches. Got a four-way match, which looks like it is it's a four-way tag match. I was confused for a second. Four-way tag match. House of Black, team of Malakai Black and Brody King, taking on Tomohiro Ishii and Kyle O'Reilly, and the team of Roger Strong and Gabriel Kidd, and the team of Private Party, Zay and Quinn. I mean, they're trying to do something with Gabriel Kidd and the Undisputed Kingdom, it looks like, but I've talked 1,000 times about how little I care about that whole group. Private Party really needs a W. I mean, they're super ultra lost in the mix and have been day one AEW people. And I also know there's been a lot of injuries and stuff along the way, but I mean, I just got to kind of default here and say House of Black probably wins this one. Now, as far as what I believe will be on the main show, we have the ladder match for the vacant AEW TNT title. This is Takeshita versus Mark Briscoe versus Jack Perry versus Dante Martin versus Leo Rush versus El Fantasmo. I'm going to say Jack Perry wins, even though, like, they could have just literally handed him the championship, which is what they were doing in storyline, the Young Bucks, that is. I'm going to say Jack Perry still winds up winning this thing. I'll say either him or Takeshita, but I'm going to go with Jack Perry. In a trios match where the Learning Tree, the team of Chris Jericho, Big Bill, and Jeff Cobb, along with Brian Keith on the outside, are going to take on Samoa Joe Hook and Shibata. I'm going to take the Samoa Joe Hook Shibata team in this one. I'm going to assume they probably get the win over Jeff Cobb. We got Timeless Toni Storm, along with Luther, defending her AEW Women's World title against Mina Shirakawa. Mariah May will be at ringside in support of both of the competitors in this one. I'm going to take Timeless Toni to retain, and I think it obviously writes itself at Wembley, All In. Toni Storm defending the title against Mariah May coming off of an Owen Hart tournament, you know, win. I think that's the match to do for the title at Wembley. We got Zack Sabre Jr. taking on Orange Cassidy. Stylistically, this will be weird, but it's going to be a lot of fun. Orange Cassidy always rises to the occasion in these matches, and Zack Sabre Jr. is literally one of the best wrestlers in the entire world. Technically speaking, ZSJ is always going to be in that conversation for sure. It's a tough one. I'm going to take ZSJ in this one. My heart's kind of going Orange Cassidy. My mind's going ZSJ. I'm going to go ZSJ. But I do think Orange Cassidy needs to, like, rebuild and start getting a lot of big wins again, because he really should be consistently one of the top guys in AEW, in my opinion. We got MJF versus Hishicero. I talked about in the spotlight how I don't like this being MJF's match, although it's like nothing against Hishicero, it's just you figure MJF would just be in a bigger position than this on a show like this, but, you know, they're kind of building more towards him at All In anyways, which kind of, you know, serves to my whole point about the importance of this show in general being when it is. But that said, I mean, it's a no-brainer. MJF's going to beat Hishicero. Hopefully it's just a really good match. We got Jon Moxley defending the IWGP World Heavyweight Championship against Tetsuya Naito. I would love to see Moxley continue the run, but I don't watch enough New Japan on a consistent basis for it to, like, matter for me. I just think it's a badass concept that Jon Moxley's getting to do that for his own career, for himself. But I'm going to go with Naito to win the championship here and bring it back to New Japan. We got the Elite, the team of Matthew Nicholas Jackson and Kazuchika Okada. They're taking on Scissor Ace, the team of Anthony Bowens, Masked Caster, and Hiroshi Tanahashi. I mean, I feel like the Elite's got to win here. They can't keep taking L's, especially in like a random type of match. Like it's random from the sense of like the participants on a show like this. It kind of feels like that with Daddy Ass being on the outside and everything. But obviously, why am I blanking on The Acclaimed? I forgot the name of the group for a second. The Acclaimed have been feuding with the Elite recently, especially the Young Bucks. So, I mean, it makes sense that they're doing this match, but, I mean, I feel like the Elite's got to win. We have Mercedes Moné in a winner-takes-all match against Stephanie Vaquer, and this is going to be AEW TBS Championship versus New Japan Wrestling Strong Women's Championship. I think Mercedes Moné wins both of these belts here in this one. We got Brian Danielson taking on Shingo Takagi. This is a first-round match in the Owen Hart Cup tournament. I'm definitely going to go with Danielson here. I think it's going to be a badass match. I don't think these two have wrestled each other in like a really, really, really long time. I mean, it would have obviously been unless it's something's happened recently and I missed it, it would have been obviously pre-Danielson going to WWE all those years ago. So this would be a lot of fun stylistically, but Danielson, I feel like, has got to win. I mean, it's an AEW tournament to go to the main event of All In. In Wembley, Danielson picks up the win here. And what I'm assuming is the main event of the show, we have Swerve Strickland defending his AEW World Championship with Prince Nana on the outside against Will Ospreay, who, of course, is the international championship, but this is not for his title. If you want elaborated thoughts on this, check out the spotlight, because I have a lot of thoughts about Ospreay and his positioning in the company, how important I think he is. But I do think Swerve is going to retain here. So I will say Swerve leaves AEW New Japan's Forbidden Door as the AEW World Champion. All right, moving on. Spoiler alert. These are TNA spoilers for upcoming episodes of Explosion and Impact. If you do not want spoilers, you want to remain spoiler-free, look at the description in the description underneath the audio you're listening to right now. I've got timestamps there, but if you don't want the spoilers, just move around. If you do want them, they're coming to you in 3, 2, 1. Now, these are TNA TV taping spoilers from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And these included appearances by not just Charlie Dempsey from NXT, but also Izzy Dame, Miles Bourne, and Tavian Heights. They all appeared throughout all these tapings. I am reading these, by the way, courtesy of Bodyslam.net. So massive shout out to Bodyslam.net and our friends over there for these spoilers. These are the TNA spoilers right here coming at you. Starting off, we have the Explosion tapings, Friday, June 28th. You had First Class, the team of AJ Francis and Rich Swann over Sinner and Saint. Sami Callihan over Trent Seven. Moose over Bhupinder Gujjar. It says Alicia Edwards is on commentary for that. And Ace Austin with Chris Bay defeats Brian Myers. Eddie Edwards was on commentary for that one. As far as Impact tapings go, is for June 28th. Dango defeats Chris Bay. It says Eddie Edwards and Brian Myers interfered to help Dango. Leon Edwards versus Trey Miguel. Oh, sorry, Leon Edwards. That's the UFC, Leon Edwards. Still in UFC mode from last night. Leon Slater versus Trey Miguel goes to a no contest. It says Charlie Dempsey interferes and attacks everyone. Jody Threat and Danny Luna goes to a time limit draw. Masha Slamovic and Alicia Edwards come out and attack both. Frank Kazarian defeats Mike Santana by countout. It says Dango attacked Santana and sent him into the steel post. Santana could not make the count and get back into the ring. Speedball Mike Bailey defeats Jonathan Gresham and Kushida in what looks like a triple threat match. TNA World Knockouts champion Jordan Grace defeats Izzy Dame in an open challenge. Charlie Dempsey defeats Zachary Wentz. Miles Bourne interferes and attacks the Rascals along with Dempsey after the match, which I expected these kind of things to happen. There's been a lot of speculation that the Rascals are going to be a part of this back and forth between NXT and TNA. Giselle Shaw defeats Tasha Steelz. Eric Young and Josh Alexander defeat Champagne Singh and Mustafa Ali. It says Ali left Singh before the match ended. Matt Hardy and Rebe Hardy. I've combined both their names there. Matt Hardy and Rebe Hardy defeat Alicia Edwards and Eddie Edwards. It says Hardy beat Eddie with a twist of fate. We have more explosion taping results for June 29th. This was Gujar over Shogun and Chris Bay and Ace Austin over Sinner and Saint. And then for the Impact on June 29th, we had the No Quarter Catch Crew, the team of Charlie Dempsey, Tavian Heights, and Miles Bourne. They defeat the Rascals, the team of Zachary Wentz, Trey Miguel, and they also had Kushida. Jonathan Gresham comes out to brawl with Kushida, taking him out of the match. Zaya Brookside defeats Alicia Edwards. Tomasha Slamovich tries to help Edwards, but Jody Threat and Danny Luna come out to help. Speedball Mike Bailey defeats Champagne Singh after Ali interference. We had Rosemary over Tomasha Slamovich. Says there was a contract signing for the world title at Slammiversary. We had Mustafa Ali over Leon Slater and Trent Seven. Jordan Grace over Danny Luna. Frank Kazarian over Sami Callihan. Moose and Steve Maclin over Joe Hendry and Josh Alexander. Eric Young over Rich Swann. AJ Francis versus Rhino never starts because of interference from Rich Swann, who attacks Rhino. We had Brian Myers and Eddie Edwards over the Hardy Boys to retain the TNA Tag Team titles by DQ. It says Dango runs in and causes the disqualification. Mike Santana comes in and attacks Dango. So that was like all the results there for upcoming episodes of Impact and Explosion. Looks like a lot of good stuff. You know, as I mentioned before, I'm really into the whole TNA and the whole TNA and NXT crossover stuff going on right now. I think it's pretty clear that Wes Lee will reunite with the Rascals soon, and that's going to be pretty great to see. And I don't know if they can incorporate Myron Reed into that at all sometime soon, but it'd be great to see him as a part of this too. But yeah, I really like what I'm seeing from these results. It looks like a lot of good matches. Interesting to see the Hardy Boys taking the L in the tag team match, but I'd imagine that's probably because the Hardy Boys probably won't be sticking around in TNA very long, is my guess. I feel like those guys are going to be back in the WWE eventually, just by gut feeling. But that all said, those are the spoilers for Impact and Explosion. Moving on, got results for NXT Level Up. This show aired on June 28th. I watched it on Hulu, so that's where I recommend y'all check it out. And this was three matches and a quick interview segment as per usual. Show started off with Riley Osborne over Jasper Troy. The finish of this one was Osborne hitting a disaster kick, followed up by a shooting star press for the 1-2-3. After that, we had a quick interview segment where Jasmine Nix is talking along with JC Jane, who has the face mask on. They're basically confident going into Jasmine Nix's upcoming match against Kendall Gray, which I'll talk about now, which was Jasmine Nix defeating Kendall Gray. Gets him with a Pele kick for the 1-2-3. And the main event of the show, we had Dante Chen over Miles Bourne. The finish here was Chen hitting his Chental Touch, which is, I've always called it the Hadouken. It's like, if you've watched Street Fighter, or played Street Fighter, or really either, I guess, technically, Street Fighter had some movies and stuff, but the Hadouken, like basically like the double palms to the chest, now called the Chental Touch by Dante Chen, which I like for the 1-2-3. And keeping on the WWE topics here, maybe some quick predictions for WWE Money in the Bank. Since, as I mentioned at the top of the show, I will not be doing an episode of The Weekender before Money in the Bank between now and then. And I will be doing more thoughts and predictions on the spotlight, though, and giving away Wrestle Rumble entries. That's the main YouTube channel for Fightful. Watch the Spotlight, 8:30 a.m. Eastern Time, every Thursday morning. As far as predictions for Money in the Bank, I'm going to go with, let's see. I'll start off with, man, all these are kind of tough. Actually, literally all of these are difficult. I'm looking at the five-match card right now, and I'm like, okay, there's some real decisions to be made. So I'll start with the women's Money in the Bank. There's still an open spot in both these ladder matches, but we've got Io Sky versus Chelsea Green versus Lyra Valkyria versus Tiffany Stratton versus Naomi versus either Dakota Kai, Ivy Nile, or Zoe Stark. I'm going to take Tiffany Stratton to win. I just feel like Tiffy time is just super over. She's very good in the ring, super marketable, getting great reactions. I just, her action figures, or trading cards especially, because I don't know how many action figures, I don't know if she has any action figures yet, but I know her trading cards are becoming very valuable and sought after in that market. I'll take Tiffany Stratton to win the women's Money in the Bank. For the men's Money in the Bank, we got Jey Uso, Carmelo Hayes, Andrade, Chad Gable, LA Knight, and either Drew McIntyre, Ilya Dragunov, or Sheamus. On a personal level, I'd like to see McIntyre win the briefcase, like get into the match, win the briefcase, and then, you know, win the championship again, and him and Punk being for the title and all that stuff. But at this point, you really don't need the title associated with that. It's a big match on its own. So I'm thinking the move might actually be Ilya Dragunov gets in the match, Ilya Dragunov wins Money in the Bank, and Gunther wins the world championship at SummerSlam. They're going to be doing that Bash in Berlin show in Germany in August. So, I mean, maybe that's the move. Gunther wins the championship at SummerSlam. Because you could do it because you'd have SummerSlam. That's the beginning of August, right? Yeah, SummerSlam is the beginning of August. And then you have Bash in Berlin later that month. I would probably do that. I'd have Gunther win the championship at SummerSlam. And then I would have Dragunov cash in ahead of time, like RVD did, heading into One Night Stand. I'd have Dragunov call a shot and say, Gunther versus Dragunov at Bash in Berlin. I'd do that. As far as the world championship goes for this show, we got Damian Priest defending his world title against Seth Rollins in a last chance match. It says if Priest wins, Rollins can never challenge for the title as long as Priest is champion. If Rollins wins, Priest must leave the Judgment Day. This is tough because like the whole wild card is Gunther, and I feel like they're not going to do Gunther versus Priest. I could see them doing Rollins versus Gunther though. So I'm going to actually say Seth Rollins defeats Damian Priest. And then, as I mentioned before, Gunther defeats Seth Rollins at SummerSlam. And then maybe another layer even farther than that, we go, you know, Gunther defending against Dragunov at Bash in Berlin. We got Sami Zayn taking on Bron Breakker, defending the Intercontinental Championship. I think Bron Breakker will probably win this one. They're just massively pushing Braun, so I think he'll probably just get the W here and become the IC champion, so I'll take Bron Breakker. And then we've got a six-man tag match for Cody Rhodes, Randy Orton, and Kevin Owens are going to be taking on the Bloodline. It'll be some sort of combination of Solo Sikoa, Tama Tonga, Tonga Loa, and Jacob Fatu. Maybe they'll leave Jacob Fatu out as like the kind of not untested, but like the mysterious kind of wild card for like a bigger debut as like a singles match or something, maybe against Cody a little later on or something. I don't know. But I mean, Fatu, in my opinion, is the most talented of the whole group as far as in the ring. I've been watching his work for years, obviously, covering him for MLW and the Indies and whatnot. But it honestly doesn't matter who wins this match. I know that sounds weird because this is just progressing storyline and getting closer to what looks like it's going to be Cody Rhodes versus Solo Sikoa at SummerSlam. So I'm going to say the Bloodline wins this one. I'll take the Bloodline over Orton, Owens, and Rhodes. So that's going to do it for this episode of the Fightful Select Weekender Podcast. I've been Steven Jensen. Please follow me on Twitter or X at FightTalk_. Please hit the like button here on FightfulSelect.com. Please use code FightTalk on independentwrestling.tv and watch the Spotlight every Thursday morning, 8:30 a.m. Eastern Time, youtube.com/Fightful. Till next weekend, just professional wrestling.